Good afternoon. The Energy, Utilities, and Telecommunications Committee will be called to order. I want to welcome everybody. Actually, we're missing a few people, so we'll do some welcome greetings a little bit later. We have a new committee member, Senator Jeff Hayden. So he took off. He was supposed to give a little song and dance, but he's gone. So when he comes back, we'll have him introduce himself. And I want to just welcome you all back. It's always good to see these great smiling faces out there. We have a very good energy year coming up. Today we're going to do Telecom 101, and very excited about that. I think it's important to just get a refresher course on telecommunications and what is coming forward. So Brent Christensen, from the president and CEO of Minnesota Telecom Alliance, and then Dan Lipschultz from Moss and Barnett are going to give us a little rundown on Telecom 101. I appreciate that. And then next Tuesday, we're also going to have a broadband mapping discussion from Connect Minnesota, and we'll be talking about the FCC order that's addressing the universal service funding and inter-carrier compensation. So those are the next two hearings, and really we're going to focus on telecommunications. There wasn't a lot that there wasn't anything we did last year with that, but apparently there are some serious issues coming down the pipeline. So we thought today we would just take this opportunity to get back up to speed. Like I said earlier, we have a new member of the committee, Senator Jeff Hayden. Welcome. This is a great committee. We do a lot of good things here. And so if you could just explain a little bit where you come from and why you like energy.
Sure. Well, thank you. First of all, Madam Chair, that's very nice of you to welcome me. I am Senator Jeff Hayden. I am a former House member. District. I represent District 61, and 61B was my house district. I won't say taking the place of, but I guess replacing the great Senator Linda Berglund, who you guys know has been here in this body for over 30 years and in the building for about 40. So there are big shoes to fill, and as I was looking at my committee assignments, one of the things that interests me was, of course, finance and bonding. However, as a freshman member, I wasn't able to get those. But no, really.
Also, energy was your second choice. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, really. Energy and telecom and access is really important to my district. I represent kind of what I call Midtown Minneapolis, and so there is a growing infrastructure there, and we just had a lot of conversations, though some of the room knows, about how the power is going to get to those buildings. I have Abbott Northwest Hospital and the Wells Fargo campus and others. So we are really looking at how do we figure that out, what does energy consumption mean to that area, and how do we do that best. The other thing that I'm really interested in, you guys will know, is I'm a pretty good gadget guy, and I think that the internet has really equaled the playing field, and so I really want to make sure that we have as much access to all communities, especially those that are low income and ethnic communities that don't always have access. I think it is very important, and as we look at all of the great issues in this state, I think that this issue of access to the internet is one of them that's most important. So I'm here to listen and to learn, and thank you for the welcome, and thank you to all the members who've been so good over the last couple of days in welcoming to the Senate.
Oh, thank you, Senator Hayden. So your gadget guy, can you help me with my iPad?
Yeah.
I need help. Great. February 2nd, too, just to go through a little bit more agenda, we're going to have the hearing on the Renewable Energy Standard Cost Compliance Report. That was a bill that we passed, Senator Benson's bill from last year. So we're going to have a rundown on the findings on that. And that should be interesting. We'll be talking a little bit about Big Hydro also. February 9th, we're going to have a hearing on the distributed generation, which is a follow-up of the department's hearings that they had this past summer and fall. So we'll get a rundown on that. On February 23rd, this is a little farther out, and we'll be talking with Senator Magnus, the chair of Ag, on this, but we are going to be hearing about the trends on the natural gas industry. I think it's really a good idea to get our hands around what's going on with natural gas, where it's been going forward, how it's going to affect the total baseload energy requirements going out. We're going to have Chris McGill from the Natural Gas Association speaking to us. So it's going to be a fairly short session for us, maybe 8-9 hearings, something like that. Welcome any ideas, any energy bills going forward. We haven't seen anything yet, but I'm sure some people are working on some. We will definitely embrace them. But I don't actually see a lot of legislation this year. There are some things that we absolutely have to take care of this year, and that is the Renewable Development Fund. We have to rein that in and figure out. Right now, we just have a sunset on it. But if we do not do anything with that bill, it goes back to where it was. And obviously, everybody in this room knows we have to get that under control. That's probably our highest priority. I'd also like to look at the right of first refusal legislation. That's a big issue. The integrated resource plan going forward, and maybe a little bit of net metering. We'll see about that. And that's about it. And, of course, you know, we always have that ongoing discussions about baseload energy, nuclear, and coal, which we'll probably address, too. So Senator Hayden, we have a very open, very fun committee here. We look at energy as being a very serious business, but we do have a good time. So welcome to everybody. And with that, I would like to bring Mr. Christensen and Mr. Lipschultz up at the same time, please. Please state your name for record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. And the Minnesota Telecom Alliance is a trade association that represents over 80 independent telephone companies in Minnesota.
And for the record, Madam Chair, my name is Dan Lipschultz. I'm with the law firm of Moss & Barnett. I represent a number of competitive local exchange carriers, including TW Telecom, Integra Telecom, Paytech, TDS Metricom, and an assortment of others. I'm afraid I'll leave a few out, and I apologize to them for that. And again, I'm happy to be here, and I'm glad you're having this hearing. I think this is an important start for you to kind of lay the groundwork for work you'll have ahead of you.
We had talked about having this hearing last year, and if we would have done this last year, it would have been vastly different than what we're talking about now. The telecom landscape, because of the FCC order, is changed our business dramatically and will change our business dramatically over the next several years. So what we'd like to do is just talk about a little bit about the industry landscape as it is today, the wireline business, the wireless business, a little bit of the regulatory landscape and how that affects our businesses, and then eligible telecommunications carrier requirements. ETC status is important for telephone companies or any company that wants to get universal service funds at the from the federal level, and those designations are established by the commission. And then talk a little bit about the interconnection between providers and then telecom competition. One of the directives that we have is to explain acronyms as we go through, and we've got a few of them. And so if I slip up because I do this, please stop me and ask me, and I will tell you what it means. And if I don't know, between the two of us, we'll make it up. So. Is that mine?
Mr. Lipschultz?
I think I'm on here.
Mr. Lipschultz.
Okay. I think a lot of what we're going to talk about today is regulation, but we thought before we start talking about regulation, we ought to talk about the industry being regulated and kind of set the stage. Normally, I recommend against taking notes when I speak, because when you look at the page after I'm done, you'll realize you've got nothing of value. But I'd suggest you take notes and maybe write down two words, because I think two words more than anything else define the telecom industry as it is today and as it's evolved over the last 10 years. They both begin with the letter C. One is change, and the other is consolidation. This is a rapidly changing industry, and in more recent history, the last 5 years, a rapidly consolidating industry. And both of those words, both of those characteristics, have a lot of ramifications for consumers, as well as for regulators and policymakers, including this body. And if you keep that in mind and those two principles in mind, I think it'll help you sort through a lot of what you're going to hear in the coming weeks and months. When we talk about change, if you just kind of relate it to your own life, I think all of us are probably old enough, because you don't have to be very old in this room, to remember a time when you had a home phone and pay phones dotted around town. And that was it. Well, we've changed. You now have your home phone, of course, and you have a cell phone that you take with you wherever you go. There was a time when the only thing you did with your phone is talk. Now we text. There was a time when we didn't have internet, and I think most of us in this room can actually remember a time we didn't have it at all. Then there was a time when we had dial-up internet, the slow, painful dial-up. Some of us still have that, and that's an issue, I think, for some folks who can't afford or don't have access to broadband, which is really the high-speed internet we all have, or most of us, not all of us, have today. A lot of change and a lot of change to come. Consolidation. There was a time long ago, and actually not that long ago, maybe 20, 25 years ago, when we actually only had one company, Ma Bell, AT&T, providing all of our telecommunications needs. With the passage of the Telecom Act of 1996, that changed dramatically, and all of a sudden we had this explosion of different providers providing competitive service. But in the last 5 years, we've seen a pretty dramatic shift in the other direction with a lot of consolidation. There was a time not long after the divestiture of AT&T when we had 15 Bell companies. We remember Northwestern Bell, Southwestern Bell, Southern Bell, Pacific Bell. I won't name them all. That has gone down now to three. There is CenturyLink, which is kind of the inheritor of the old Northwestern Bell, then Qwest, now CenturyLink. You have Verizon, which was the inheritor of the Atlantic Bell and all of those companies out east. And then you have AT&T, which was Southwestern Bell, Bell South, Pacific Bell, and a number of others. A lot of consolidation going on. There was a time when you had 87 small rural exchange companies, telephone companies here in Minnesota. And, Brent, I don't know, how many do we have today?
That's a little over 80.
A little over 80. It's dropping, and it's consolidating. And I think over the next 10 to 20 years, it's going to go down pretty dramatically. So the world's getting smaller at the same time it's getting bigger. And, again, a lot of implications for consumers and for regulators and policymakers. So what does the industry look like? What's out there? Well, you have wireline companies, fewer of them than we used to have, but doing things in very different ways, interconnecting with one another in ways that weren't true even 10, 12, 15 years ago. You have wireless carriers now, which, of course, we didn't have in abundance quite some time ago. Among the wireline carriers, by the way, you have cable companies who, at a time not too long ago, provided nothing more than cable TV and now provide voice service, just like your phone company, as well as high-speed internet service. You have broadband that we didn't have before when we had the old dial-up internet. You have a copper network, which is the older network, but you have increasingly more glass or fiber, because fiber is really glass, being deployed around the country. We'll talk a little bit more about what that really means, because we're still in largely in a copper world. We're moving from the old circuit switched world to an IP internet protocol world, where instead of taking circuits instead of electrical impulses through the wires, we're actually taking packets of information, packeting them, and sending them off through the same wires. And I guess maybe it might help to kind of sort of take a little poll here. I apologize if I'm departing from protocol, but raise your hand if you have wireline voice service in your home, either from the phone company or a cable company.
Probably.
So a lot of you don't have that, just have a cell phone.
Mr. Lipschitz,
yes.
How many of you don't know what you have? Okay. That's where we're starting from.
This is 101. We'll save 201 for a later time. The point is, a lot of you have a wireline phone at home, but some people no longer do. Some people are just relying on their cell phone. But what you ought to know is that even if you have a cell phone, almost every call you make eventually finds its way onto the wireline network. We're still a wired world, but we're now using wireless phones to connect to that wireline world.
If I can, Madam Chair, if I can just...
Mr. Christensen.
Just interject right there. You know, everybody thinks when you talk about wireless, you think about it wireless from point to point. It's actually the only part that's wireless is from the tower to the device. The towers are all connected by fiber or some other method. And we probably should have started off a little bit about why the two of us are up here and not long-distance companies or not the cable companies or not wireless companies, because we can pretty much talk to you about the wired network, and I can talk about the incumbent network, and Dan can speak to the competitive part, which is really where the cable companies come in. But wireless carriers are not, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this when we get into the regulation side of it. Wireless companies are not as regulated in Minnesota. They're regulated more by the FCC, and neither are long-distance companies. So that's kind of why the two of us are up here, and we don't have a whole panel of 10 people up here.
Mr. Lipschitz.
And so in this wireline world with wireless calls, with folks getting service from cable companies and phone companies, I wanted to break down just a little bit about who's out there providing these services. And you have the wireline companies providing wireline service. Most of us, I think of that as the local phone company or the competitive company, a number of whom I represent. Or it can be the cable company that provides phone service now on a competitive basis that wasn't providing phone service 10, 15 years ago. You once had a world of IXCs, acronym, inter-exchange carriers. So those were the old long-distance companies. And you remember a time when you had AT&T, MCI, and Sprint, the big three long-distance companies. Now, there were about a dozen, two dozen smaller long-distance companies most of us didn't hear of, but a lot of them were out there. They're gone. There really is no inter-exchange carrier or long-distance company anymore. I suppose Sprint is, in a sense, but Sprint's also a wireless company. For the most part, AT&T and MCI are no longer inter-exchange carriers, no longer long-distance companies. They are now part of what used to be large Bell operating companies, AT&T and Verizon. MCI became part of Verizon, an old Bell company that is now the new Bell company. AT&T became part of AT&T. AT&T Long Distance is now AT&T, the local phone company, which was one of the old, an accumulation of all the old Bell companies. It's a sort of a mixed up, crazy world. But the point here is that the world's changed in the telecom industry, and it doesn't break down the way it used to. It doesn't break out into the same piece parts it used to break out into before. And that seems sort of trivial, I guess, in a sense, but as you dig into this, you find out just how important that is as you look at how to regulate and how to legislate in the new world of telecommunications. I hope that lays kind of the groundwork and gets you a sense of what the industry is. And I think now maybe I'll turn it over to Brent to talk about how that industry is being regulated and where it might be headed.
Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chair, we missed the last point on there about who is Vonage anyway. And I think that's an important bullet point here because you see the commercials. You see the commercials where they're talking about throwing their phone bills away and paying for telephone service and not having to pay very much for it. Vonage is a voice over internet protocol provider, a VOIP provider, and they're not regulated at all at this point in time. We'll talk next week about how that's going to change a little bit, but they're not. They're considered an information service and not a telephone company. All evidence to the contrary when you see their TV ads. Madam Chair, I'm going to talk a little bit about the regulatory landscape, and this is really the so what about this are you interested in, and talk a little bit of how it breaks down from the state level and also the federal level. Congress and the state legislatures give the statutory framework, and your committee has jurisdiction over the state portion of that framework that telecommunications providers operate under. A lot of the oversight is delegated, and we'll talk specifically about how it works in Minnesota. But to very degrees to the Federal Communications Commission and state utility commissions. The PUC is, as you know, is a regulatory decision maker in telecom matters. It's charged with protecting the public interest, and it's comprised of five commissioners appointed by the governor with Senate approval. And each serve six-year terms, and the governor selects the chair. The PUC is funded 100% in our arena by assessments on regulated carriers and other utilities. The Department of Commerce provides the PUC with analysis of filings, tariffs, interconnection agreements, complaints, and then the ETC status that I talked about earlier, and other things. And they're also charged with protecting the public interest. On top of that, the Attorney General's office also serves as a public advocate on behalf of residential and small business consumers. And I would submit, as a former general manager of a telephone company, there's one more regulator that we didn't put on here. And that, in a small town that I come from of 2,400 people, that's the people that we serve and the next-door neighbors. They're more powerful in many ways than any of the other regulators that we
deal with. Mr. Christensen.
Yes, ma'am.
I failed to mention to the committee that Mr. Christensen is my constituent. Just a little side note. But he does run a very good. Yeah, full disclosure.
Where?
Medelia. Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chair, on the federal side of things, the FCC has jurisdiction over interstate voice traffic. And you can think of this in the current context of any call that is made within the state of Minnesota is an intrastate call.
Just so it doesn't ring.
And any call that is made from one state to that begins in one state and ends in another state is an interstate call. So as far as from a jurisdictional standpoint, that helps determine who has jurisdiction over that call. So if someone calls me from Iowa to Minnesota, the state has no jurisdiction over the call, the FCC does. They also have jurisdiction over internet traffic. By definition, internet has been designated as interstate traffic, and that also includes, you know, broadband these days. And then they also have established the Federal Universal Service Fund. That was part of the 1934 Telecom Act at the federal level, and the goal of the USF Fund is to provide kind of an equalization of rates so that people in rural Minnesota don't pay more than people in the metro. On the state side of the house, really the PUC, the Attorney General's and the Department of Commerce, and then obviously the legislature, they have jurisdiction over intrastate voice traffic, so calls beginning and ending in the state of Minnesota, and also the facilities. They work with and approve wholesale and interconnection agreements. They establish eligible telecommunications carrier status, which is needed by a telephone company to draw from the Universal Service Fund. And then they authorize local and long-distance voice providers to provide service in Minnesota. Madam Chair, the ETC status for universal service, that really in Minnesota applies primarily to small rural carriers in-state. You have to be able to serve the entire exchange. And I should probably back up a little bit. Way back when telephones started, there were franchise boundaries that were established, and each telephone company has one or more exchanges that they serve, which is a geographical area that of their service territory. And they have to be able to provide telephone service to the entire exchange in order to qualify for universal service funds. And that ETC status is approved by the Public Utilities Commission today. You know, one of the things that we're facing in our industry, and we're going to get into this a lot more next week, but the telecom world that we live in is moving from a public switch telephone network to a broadband network. And nobody disputes that. The question is, how are we going to make that move without collapsing the network? And that's where the regulatory environment that we live in is so crucial. We broke these slides up, so I'm trying to figure out who's supposed to do which one.
I'll start, and I think you'll want to fill in some details.
Yep.
Interconnection, I guess, you know, what does that mean and why is it important? What interconnection is in this world is the interconnection of different phone companies with each other. Why is that important? If you have one phone company hooked up to you as a customer and another phone company hooked up to someone else as a customer, if the two phone companies aren't interconnected, the customers won't be able to talk to one another. There was actually a time in this country's history where you had a wave of competitive carriers challenging the old AT&T monopoly, and AT&T refused to interconnect with them because there were no laws requiring interconnection. Well, what happened? These competitors would come in, and they'd sign up customers who were not the biggest businesses, not the best prized customers, and they'd be cut off from the big businesses, the customers that mattered. And so you had this world where, as a competitive carrier, your customers can't talk to the people they really want to talk to. And ultimately, not surprisingly, those competitive carriers failed. Companies have to be interconnected for all of this to work. And I guess, Brent, maybe you can fill in some of the details and some of the kind of nuances and permutations of that.
Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chair, centralized equal access is it's not unique around the country, but it's a really big part of what happens in Minnesota. And you probably aren't aware of this, but Minnesota is second only to Iowa in the number of telephone companies that we have. We've got over 80 different independent companies, fewer holding companies that own them now, but Iowa's got, I think they've got over 130. So we're talking, in Minnesota, we're talking companies as large as CenturyLink all the way down to Johnson Telephone that has 60 subscribers. So some of those smaller companies aren't able to, you know, they can't put the switches in, they can't do a lot of those things. So many years ago, they got together and formed a centralized equal access network. which means basically there's one hub where they can send all of their long-distance traffics or connection points between telephone companies. And we're very lucky in Minnesota. Envoy is the centralized equal access provider in this state. And last year when we were going through some issues with call terminating problems where the Vonages and the Magic Jacks of the world just weren't terminating calls to rural Minnesota, we were able to trace those problems down because of the centralized equal access opportunities that we have in Minnesota. There are also a lot of network transport agreements. Because we have so much fiber deployed between the companies, a lot of the independent companies have formed transport groups where they lease fiber, they provide transport for a variety of data and voice traffic. And then there are a lot of resale opportunities for small telcos. My family's telephone company has been around since 1903, and we're not big enough to do our own long distance, but there's definitely a need in our community. So we resell long distance from a larger provider. And then, as Dan spoke about the internet connection between the incumbents and the competitive carriers, and he's going to talk a lot more about the competitive nature of the world and the need to interconnect between providers and how that's become more and more important since the competitive environment.
And to talk,
Mr. Lipschultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To talk a little bit about competition, you don't have to go back too far to remember a time when there were no competitive carriers. You had your one monopoly carrier. If you go back long enough, it was one company, AT&T, that gave you everything. After the AT&T divestiture, you had the baby bells, the bell companies like Northwestern Bell in your community, or small rural companies in the more rural areas of this state and others, as your sole provider for all your telecom needs. And they were heavily regulated by state authorities, the Minnesota State Public Utilities Commission here, who would tell them, here are the rates you can charge, just like we regulate energy companies today. Here are the rules and regulations you need to abide by. Here are the service quality standards you need to meet. Well, Congress and the legislature at roughly the same time in the late 1990s decided to make a major shift in telecommunications policy and to try to introduce competition into that market for the first time in over 100 years when, as I referred to it earlier, there was a failed attempt to introduce competition into the market. The Telecom Act of 1996 was that legislation, and it was followed by FCC rules, massive FCC rules, a rulemaking here in Minnesota by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, all designed to create an environment that would produce competition into an otherwise generally monopolistic industry. And I'd say it's been largely successful. It's always a challenge, an ongoing challenge, but it has been largely successful. And as a result, you have companies like the ones I represent who build their networks in part but can't afford, because it's such an expensive endeavor to build your entire end-to-end network, they can't afford to build the entire network on their own. So what do we do? What do my clients do? They build some of their own network, and then they lease networks from the incumbent carriers who had networks already in place over that long period of time when they were a regulated monopoly. And that's the world under the Telecom Act that has produced a lot of competition. But you also have competitors who do build from end to end. Probably the chief competitor in the industry today are the cable companies who build end to end. There are others as well. I represent one of them, TW Telecom. The cable companies, of course, built their networks in localities to provide cable TV service. And they did that building under a franchise granted by the local communities. What they did over time was they revamped and sort of augmented their networks to also provide telecommunications and broadband internet services. And so you've got various different types of competitors, but for the most part, two classes of competitors. One are the type I represent who build partial networks and then lease the incumbent networks, and the others, generally the cable companies, build networks end-to-end that go all the way to your home or to your business. At the end of the day, if you think about it, if you're sitting at home or sitting in your building, and generally certainly in your home, there are two wires into your home through which you can get voice service and broadband internet service. One is the local phone company, the incumbent phone company's network, and the other is the cable company's network. There are generally two wires into your home. If you want more than two competitors, you generally need to have other competitors out there who can lease the lines that go into your home. The cable companies are not required to lease their lines to clients like mine. The incumbent phone companies like CenturyLink are under the Telecom Act of 1996. I guess one final thought as you think about competition in the kind of light of your policymaking and regulatory responsibilities. I think everybody here wants phone service, broadband internet service to be highly reliable, widely available, and affordable to everybody. From our perspective, we think competition more than anything will bring those goals to fruition. But competition works only if competition exists. And sometimes industries have a tendency to become non-competitive. Or in situations where the markets just don't lend themselves to competition, then consumers need government to step in and protect them from what would otherwise be a monopoly. And so it's not a monolithic picture. Competition is widespread, I think, and increasingly widespread, but it doesn't come easily to an industry that's so capital intensive. It's expensive to build a network that replicates somebody else's network. And think about that. If I invest a lot of money to build a network identical to another competitor's network, I'm not going to get all the revenue from my network because somebody else has a network getting revenue. And somebody else might build a wire. At some point, the economies of scale don't work. You can't have five different wires into somebody's home. No one would make a profit. So that's, I think, why from our standpoint, it's important to make sure that the laws in place today are vigorously enforced to make sure that on reasonable terms, competitive carriers can get access to wires that were already there under that long sort of regulated monopoly period of AT&T and the Bell companies.
Mr. Lipschultz, sir, we have a question. Senator Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if either of you could answer. You know, now it's not about minutes, it's all about data. You know, it's all about pushing data through. And I'm just wondering, can you explain how some of the surcharges and the fees are assessed differently among the carriers or the different types of modems, of mode of data transfers and what how that either helps or doesn't help, you know, whether it's wireless or wired or whether it's cable?
Mr. Lipschultz.
You've asked a really good and challenging question, which is why I'm going to turn it over to Brent.
Oh,
of course.
I knew that was coming.
Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe. The fees that are assessed on a service don't necessarily go by the service that's being provided. They're more in how the entity is regulated. So a traditional and competitive local exchange carrier, ILEC and CLEC, the telephone companies, carry a lot of that burden of the surcharges and other fees. The Universal Service Fund and a lot of the subscriber line charges that are put on by the federal government, and I'd have to defer to Mr. Bass from AT&T about wireless. I don't know if they don't pay. I don't think they pay subscriber line charges, no. But they do collect a universal service fee at a different rate. So I think the best way to answer your question is to say that it's not the service that's provided, it's who's providing it determines what the fees are going to be.
Sure.
Senator Metzen.
I should know this, but cable and dish and so forth and the like companies are not going before the PUC for rate increases because there's competitive other companies doing the same thing. Is that what I heard you say?
Mr. Christensen or Mr. Lipschultz?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzen, I think there are two different things here.
You tell me what they are because these rates are, in my opinion, kind of getting out of hand, and I just wondered if somebody should have to go before somebody to, I don't know.
What Brent was talking about in response to Senator Howe were these surcharges imposed by the FCC for the most part to some extent at the local level or at the state level here to try to fund various programs to ensure that everybody has service everywhere at a certain minimum level. And I think the question then is, well, sort of who does this and where can you go to change it? And for the most part, most of the fees are really set by the FCC.
Madam Chair, I'm not just talking about the fees. I understand. I know where they're coming from.
If
but
you're
I, just the
about,
rates.
If you're talking about the rates.
The rates is what I'm talking about.
The rates, if you're talking about the rates, for the most part, those rates are no longer set by the commission, although the commission has oversight over those rates. So we're no longer dealing with the kind of rate regulation we used to have and that we have currently in the energy industry. Phone companies will put their rates in tariffs, file them with the commission, and they have the right to raise those rates. They have the right to lower those rates. And to the extent those rates are higher than consumers would like them to be, there is recourse in part at the Public Utilities Commission, but the commission's authority is far different from what it used to be when it comes to regulating those rates. And Brent can fill you in more detail.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzen, what you're talking about, I believe, are the video services, your cable TV, Dish, and those fees. Those are regulated under Chapter 238 of statute. Telephone companies are regulated under Chapter 237. And what Mr. Lifschultz was talking about are when cable providers provide telephone service, then the PUC has jurisdiction over that. What I believe you're talking about are the video services and your cable bill, and yep. That is determined. That's not governed by the PUC. That's governed by franchise agreements between your community or collection of communities and the provider. So, for instance, if a telephone company wanted to go into the video business, they would have to, if they're in the telephone business, then they're regulated by the Department of Commerce and the PUC and the AG. If they want to go into the video business and provide broadcast video, then they have to have a separate franchise agreement for every community they're going to serve. So to your point, there's a lot smarter people than me can tell you about that. I know my bill's going up too.
And if you're a satellite provider, Madam Chair, if you're a satellite provider, you're not regulated by the local communities or the Public Utilities Commission. So it's an interesting world, as Brent said, and it seems counterintuitive, who regulates you and how you're regulated doesn't depend so much on what you provide, but more on who it is providing it. That seems a little strange, and that creates, I think, a lot of the problems and anxieties that consumers and regulators and policymakers have, and Senator Metzen, I think, accounts for the frustration I'm hearing from you right now.
Madam Chair, our goal here was to give you enough information to thoroughly confuse you. And
you're doing it pretty good, yeah.
And
you're succeeding.
Thank you. And hopefully whet your appetite a little bit. And what I would really like to do at this point is I would like you guys to tell me what you'd like to know, and we'll do our best to answer that. And I think those were a couple great ways to start.
Anybody else have any questions? Isn't there some way to get this a little more streamlined, or is the Fed's going to do that for us?
I think they're going to take care of that, Madam Chair.
Yeah, exactly. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to that last slide with the CLEX, can you tell us a little bit about how those rates are negotiated with those lease networks? And then do the CLEX, do you serve more business or residential customers? What's that breakout for? I mean, I know you can't speak to each one, but just kind of generalization maybe would be helpful.
Madam Chair, Senator Sparks.
Lipschultz.
Under the Telecom Act of 96 and similar legislation here, CLEX, the competitive carriers, negotiate or attempt to negotiate those rates through what are called interconnection agreements with the incumbent carriers like CenturyLink. And under the Act, if the parties are unable to agree on those rates, the state commissions, in this case the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, has the power to arbitrate that dispute and ultimately set the rates that my clients have to pay to lease those network components, that last mile network of CenturyLink or some other incumbent carrier. And did I miss part of your?
And then the other one, do CLEX, what's the breakout of like business versus residential customers?
If you're talking about, Madam Chair, Senator Sparks, if you're talking about the competitive carriers for the most part that I represent that lease part of the network, that last mile, almost all their customers right now are business customers. For the most part, small and medium-sized businesses, to some extent larger enterprise companies. They originally started out serving residential customers but couldn't charge low enough rates because of the rates they had to pay to lease the network from the incumbent carriers. And that's not no fault of the incumbent carriers. That's just the way the economics of the industry are. And if you talk, however, about cable companies who are actually end-to-end providers. They are serving residential customers, as we all know, as well as business customers. I don't know, and I wouldn't purport to speak for cable as to what percentage is business versus consumer or residential.
Madam Chair, Senator Sparks, if I might just add, it's a little different in outstate Minnesota because there are a number of smaller providers that have gone into neighboring communities and kind of expanded their networks into neighboring communities. And my experience has been that's largely business as well, but most of those companies, when they do that, usually overbuild the entire exchange, so they have their own network, and that's typically what you find in outstate.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Jungbauer, and then Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I apologize for being a little bit late. Senator Metzen, you know, I understand the franchise issues because I used to be a mayor and we had those franchises. And as a matter of fact, in my community, you know, I'm one of the few people that can't get cable because the cable company refuses to service my house. And they have that franchise. And that's why they can charge
whatever they want,
kind of what they want, because they've got a captive audience. And people in this committee know that it took me 4 years of screaming and hollering even to get high-speed internet. So we finally have some competition there. So now that I not only have it, but my high-speed internet price went way down because of competition on that end. So that part's good. But the cable and the franchise I still hate because there's no competition. I guess what I want to know from you gentlemen as industry people, I always get kind of, I guess, cranked up about the federal government trying to take control of everything and usurping states' rights, so to speak. And I guess even on some of these issues, where do you guys see us trying to help industry, and maybe where do you see the feds overreaching, trying to take over that kind of policy that really should be instituted in the states? So help us to understand the problems and where we can help you.
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer, that is an outstanding question because we're hip deep in all of that right now. Next Tuesday, we're going to talk about the FCC orders on universal service reform and intercarrier compensation, and we're going to get really into that conversation in depth. But I will tell you that we've been meeting with the Commission and with the Department of Commerce on a regular basis on how the FCC order is going to affect the providers, my members, the telephone companies, and how those changes are going to occur. I have some very strong, passionate feelings about that as someone who provides a service. But in the end, I think you're going to find the consumers are the ones that are going to lose out. They're going to have their local service rates. They're at a floor now where they're going to be they have to be at $10 per month. That's going to go up, ratchet up over the next few years. And we're going to get to a point where local service is going to go to $30. Now, that may not seem like a really big deal here, but in Medelia, Minnesota, where I live, and you can only call 900 people locally, you got to pay the same $30. That's not cool. So the answer to your question, though, is as we move forward in this new world order, if you will, our association and our members are constantly monitoring what's going on at the FCC and the federal level, and we're finding the things and the impacts that it have on our consumers and the people that we serve. And we're working, like I said, very closely with Commerce and the Commission, and would like to work with the legislature to make sure that Minnesota is represented in those changes that are unique to what's going on with us.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you. So I guess when you come Tuesday, if maybe you could, you know, even do some bullet points for us on where you think there should be some distinction, some lines of separation. I, for one, whether you're sitting in this committee or other committees, it you know, always appears that Washington is trying to create a central government, something that our forefathers wanted to stay away from forever. And those lines of distinction and the power grab that way do affect us in terms of costs, but also kind of make the local legislators and even some of the cities and counties not part of what they should have been part of to begin with. So if you could try to, you know, give us something in terms of a handout and where you might draw those distinction and those lines so we really can understand it from that standpoint as well.
Right. Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Christensen.
The Public Utility Commissioners belong to NARUC, which is their kind of their association of commissioners. And Commissioner Wergen is on the Telecom Policy Committee and really the front lines of that. So I'd be more than happy to do that. I'm actually going to start working on that presentation tomorrow when we're done with this one. But I'll make sure we do that. But I think the commission and the department are they're very interested in this, and we're working as closely with them as we possibly can.
Great. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbar, I just wanted to echo the comments of my colleague here and tell you that, you know, that you're right. The FCC, the federal government, has been grabbing more and more authority in the telecommunications industry over time. Now, there's still a lot of authority left in the states, and I think hearing your question, you're really asking us to point out what that authority is, let you know what's left, what hasn't been taken away, or what are the states still sharing with the FCC. But I can tell you it's not just kind of the broad policies that are problematic. It's access. I mean, I've practiced in front of the FCC, and I do, as well as the Public Utilities Commission, and I can tell you I get lost out there. It is a huge bureaucratic morass. It's hard to have your voice heard at the FCC, especially if you're representing small competitive carriers like I do. I feel much more comfortable, and I think my clients get a much better hearing in front of the Public Utilities Commission here, in front of the state legislature here. And for that reason alone, I think it's important to guard to the extent you can the state's role in regulating this industry.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I think...
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you. The key is it always appears that the federal government takes over this power under the auspices of consumer protection, and it never seems to work that way. It always seems to exponentially increase costs and inversely work from what they propose.
Senator Howell. Senator Howell.
Madam yeah. Chair, I was wondering if you could speak to, with the changing technology, how it's going to impact and maybe what others in the industry are going to be looking for. One thought that comes to my mind is like the Skype and the Google Voice and Vonage, where, everybody had heartburn over the fact that they lost their 612 number, a number of years ago, and now you can get any number you want. I think Senator Metzen said he's got a 813 number. I think that's Florida. Mm-hmm. But
Hawaii.
But and the way people use these numbers is they may not need that exchange, but let's say they communicate a lot with somebody who has a traditional landline. So they get a number that's a local call for the person that they communicate a lot with. And in essence, saves money. It saves that long-distance call from somebody from a traditional landline. So I'm just wondering, what the trends are in the industry. Is there going to be anybody that's going to say, we're just going to let all the numbers like today where it can be all over? And because before you knew when you answered a call kind of which region the call was coming from. So I'm just wondering if there's any traction around that idea and where the industry is going.
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, I'm not an expert in that in that area at all, but I have to believe from the technician in me that at what point are the numbers really going to be relevant anymore? Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody in my family's cell phone number. I have them in my address book, and I have them in my computer. The world is going to IP. There's a new version of IP numbering coming out, or that's come out, called IP6, that's adding more numbers to your IP address. And I think at some point in the future, and I don't know when that is, I think IP addresses are going to become more important than telephone numbers. I can tell you when I came from Adelia and still live there and came into this job, I changed my cell phone number from a 507 number, which is Southern Minnesota, to a 651, which is in St. Paul. And didn't change anything else. Didn't change my service. Didn't change anything. So it's that there is an identification that some of us have with that. That I can tell you, my kids don't have it. They don't care.
Well, I sure miss Senator Kelly because telecommunication. He was a telecommunication guru, wasn't he? He really knew this stuff inside and out, and this has been very good. But I do just want to go back to just a simple question. Is there any state laws or rules that are interfering with the competition from providers that provide the same kind of service? Is there anything we can do for you? I know we're going to go over some of the FCC rules and regulations coming down next week, but I really want you to think about if there's anything we can do in that arena.
Madam Chair, I think when we get done with the presentation next week, I think, you know, the whole...
We'll be totally confused.
Well, I hope not. I like to think that this was kind of the where we are today, and we can talk about the FCC order, and then we can have a conversation about what comes after that. I don't know that I'm really at a point now to
okay. I'd like to have
that.
You think about that if you could.
Yeah.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess... When I think about the future and being new to the committee, I think that what would be helpful to a person like me and maybe those who aren't telecommunication gurus is to, like, understand kind of both sides of this issue. So I'm just struck by Senator Jumbauer's kind of, you know, statement about, you know, the new world order and competition and the stymieing of competition and all of those kind of things that he, I guess perceives or thinks or is happening based on his experience in this field from his municipal position as well as a distinguished member of the committee. But I think that for us, or at least for me, it would be helpful to kind of understand kind of what is happening and what is the rationale that the federal government is doing the things that they do, and so that we can get kind of a balanced approach to this so that we, at least for me, I guess I should speak for myself being new, that I really can understand what the federal government's intent is. And then before we can kind of jump to the conclusion on if it's good, bad, or indifferent, I think that for me would be really helpful just as a new member to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Hayden. As a new and old member, too, it's always good to get because this is a very difficult, complicated subject area. And is that possible to include that into your presentation on Tuesday, Mr. Christensen?
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, I certainly will do my best. I don't know that I ever want to speak for the FCC, and I think that's kind of what you're looking for is someone from them to come present here. If I understood your comments, but
Madam
I can
Chair.
Certainly tell you the best I can.
Okay, thank
Senator
you.
Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that there seems to be some presumption of what is happening is not good. I think that's what I was hearing, or that it was going to stymie competition, or that. Something along the way wasn't that this wasn't going to be good for competition, or it wasn't going to be good for the ratepayer in Minnesota. And so I'm just trying to get some sense. So even if you want to, if there's someone in the room, or if you want to come by my office and kind of give me the kind of backstory, but that's what I think is helpful to have a really thoughtful debate is kind of why are we moving forward, and then we can make a real determination on if that's bad or what we can do to change that.
The whole historical presence going back and talk about what's coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, basically. Absolutely. Yeah.
I can certainly do that.
Mr. Lipschultz, yes, or Mr. Christensen?
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, let me preview that for you because I can see where I think we left a false impression in a sense. The FCC, at least from my perspective, and I think from a perspective of a lot of folks in the federal government, have done some good things in telecom. And I think depending on who you are, you might say they've done some bad things. Philosophically, there's a perspective, I think, that says, well, whether what they do is good or bad, maybe they shouldn't be doing it. Maybe they should let the states do it because the states are closer to kind of the consumers, closer to the industry and the nuances because every state's different. Some are more rural, some are more urban. So I kind of wanted to break it out because I think we did convey a sense of this monolithic bad, and I think it's important to break that out. And whether what the FCC or Congress has done is bad or good not only depends on who you are, it depends on which FCC rule or which statute you're talking about. I mean, I can point to some where I'd say my clients think Congress did a great job and the FCC did a great job. They laid the groundwork for competition and helped promote it. In other cases, we might say, well, they've done some things that are really stifling competition. We wish they had left it to the states. So you've asked a great question. It's a very complicated answer. So I don't want to suggest that there's an easy answer. I think the backstory, sort of one-on-one with some backstory would be very helpful. And then we'll do our best to provide in our next presentation some discussion of this.
Thank you.
Anybody else interested on one-on-one? Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you. I just have a question. When you come next week, would we be able to get some idea? You mentioned fees and charges that the government puts on a bill. What percentage of a bill is fees and charges typically?
That's a good question. Yeah. So basically we're asking for more information.
Got it.
That'd be great.
Glad we're doing this in two sessions.
Yes. That's right. That's all right. Any other questions? It's good to see you all. Thank you very much, Mr. Lipschultz, Mr. Christensen.
Thank you
very much. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Thank you.
For the members who just were a little bit late, we started, and just a quick rundown of what we're going to do next Tuesday. That will be continue on with the broadband mapping discussion and some of the FCC regulations that are coming down from these two gentlemen. On February 2nd, we're going to have the hearing on the Renewable Energy Standard Cost Compliance Report that we passed last year to talk about the cost of renewable energy, and we'll have a little big hydro discussion, but I think it's important to have a really good review of what was passed and what they found out from that. February 9th, we're going to have a hearing on distributed generation, which is going to be a follow-up from the department's hearings that they had this past summer and fall. And then February 23rd, we have the natural gas discussion. So we definitely have to do the renewable development fund reform we have to do. We could talk about net metering. Like to have somebody pick up that integrated resource plan. I think that's a great one. That's bipartisan across the board. We'll continue our discussions on coal-based energy, and the right of first refusal is another big issue that we'll be looking at. Anybody else have anything that they would like to jump in and work on this year? Anything that you'd like to have a hearing on or some more information? Electric cars? No? No? Okay. Okay. You're thinking? Will you let me know? If you have any suggestions, we sure would appreciate it. It's good to see you all. With that, meeting is adjourned.